This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being until we actually ask for calls, because we have with us today a Mr. Michael Newton. He's written a book called Conspiracies and Conspiracy Theories, and I haven't talked to Michael before, but I'm pleased to have you with us on the program today. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Why don't you tell us how you happened to write this book? Now, for our listeners, it's 8.5 by 11, and it's got, pretty close to 400 or 500 pages in it, doesn't it?
Right.
All right. How did you happen to write this?
Well, this kind of thing has always been an interest of mine, and I've done similar things in the past, a book many years ago about the King assassination and so forth. My editor at Facts on File actually came up with the idea for this one to be published for a library market.
All right, fine. Well, how is it moving? Because I think we got ours to one of the book clubs.
Well, I won't see a royalty statement for another 6 months, so I'm really not sure. It's fairly new.
All right,
out on the market this year.
All right, fine. Well, now, do you believe that there really are some conspiracies out there, or do you think that this is just more of academic interest?
Oh, well, no, there's no question that conspiracies are all around us. I mean, if we go with the definition from Black's Law Dictionary, it simply means two or more people who agree to break the law or attempt to break the law. So within that context, everything from two teenage shoplifters to the mafia would qualify as conspiracies.
All right. Well, you know, you've covered so many fascinating things. Of course, a lot of my favorite things, the Council on Foreign Relations. But you ever get into UFOs? Where do UFOs fit into this? Are they real? How do they do the things that they do? And how have they been able to cover this up?
Well, I wish I could answer the how do they do question. Of course, many people don't agree that they are alien crafts. Some say that they're natural phenomenon, you know, the swamp gas or whatever stories. But the conspiratorial angle that I approached it from in the entry for UFOs here was more of the evidence of government cover-ups, the FBI investigating UFO sightings and then lying about it, the CIA opening files on various UFO activities and then trying to cover it up for whatever reason. Whether they reached a solution or not, we still don't know.
No, but I think that there is no question the UFOs are real. There has been an intentional cover-up, and the question is, why? Do they really come from outer space, or do they perhaps come from inner space? And that's my personal belief on this. I believe that, personally, that they're supernatural manifestations, and some people a lot smarter than I have always felt that they had to be metaphysical. They are not certainly of this dimension. Have you heard that theory?
Yes. In fact, I recall back in the 60s, a writer named Ivan Sanderson even suggested that UFOs might be sentient living creatures. He didn't know exactly where he thought they were coming from. A book called Uninvited Visitors. So there have been all kinds of theories, of course, coming from inside the hollow Earth or from another galaxy or Soviet or Nazi aircraft, you know, all kinds of theories.
Well, I think the main thing is that they're real and there's been a cover-up, and that would be the... Would you agree with that?
Well, there's no question that J. Edgar Hoover, for example, conducted investigations of UFOs from the late 1940s on until the time of his death and consistently lied about it. That's a documented fact from memos released under the Freedom of Information Act.
And, of course, there's a lot of fascinating information in this book. I mean, it's sort of, conspiracies from A to Z. And, of course, there are an awful lot of them in there. And we're going to, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about some of my favorite conspiracies. Because I believe, I don't know whether a guest would agree, but that there really are secret societies out there, and of course anybody who talks about them will be demonized and ridiculed. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is a newcomer to Radio Liberty. His name is Michael Newton, and he's written a fascinating book called Conspiracies and Conspiracy Theories. Actually, we picked up a copy from a book club my wife subscribes to, and it's about 500 pages, 8.5 by 11. It's a mammoth book, has all sorts of fascinating material going into the background of literally every secret society and conspiracy that's out there. And certainly Michael thinks that there are conspiracies, and we've certainly been discussing a few of them. Now, do you think that there really are secret societies working within our society today, influencing our lives that most people have no idea of?
Oh, well, I think there's no question about that. If you look into the background of groups like Skull and Bones or the Trilateral Commission or even some of the so-called fringe political groups of both left and right, anything from the Ku Klux Klan to some of the extreme left-wing groups, secret societies exist beyond doubt and have for centuries.
But, of course, anybody who talks about them, you go on to Rush Limbaugh's program, he'll ridicule you and demonize you and laugh at you, you know, as you should be so stupid as to believe they're secret societies, and yet there have always been secret societies.
Well, he was probably busy filling a prescription at the time.
Well, I feel rather sorry for Rush. I mean, he is still one of the most entertaining people I know. But as I always like to say, he's the finest conservative a commentator money could buy. He really is. He's very well paid for what he does. And, of course, it is to ridicule and demonize anybody who tries to bring out there really are secret societies. There is a move towards a one-world government and the destruction of the sovereignty of this nation and the freedom of our people. Well, let's get off into some of these specific organizations. What about Masonry? Now, there's a can of worms.
Well, of course, the theories, conspiracy theories on that, of course, go back centuries. Some connected in some way to the Knights Templar and the whole thing that we see now with the Da Vinci Code. Others try to relate it to communism or the Jews or the Catholic Church. The theories really go off in all directions.
Where is the truth, though? Or do you actually try to determine where the truth is?
Well, basically, my approach, of course, my editors wanted me to be as neutral as possible, so I basically try to present a variety of theories and then without really supporting or knocking any of them down, but sort of trace when they first were published and so on.
All right, fine. Well, when we get back, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the Knights Templar and what part the Knights Templar would have with this organization they refer to as Masonry or Freemasonry, one of the most powerful organizations in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Newton. We're talking about his book, Conspiracies and Conspiracy Theories. And, of course, what is this Knights Templar? We hear a lot about the Knights Templar. Were they around? Certainly, we've read about them in the Da Vinci Code. And, of course, supposedly, so much of what's going on today seems to tie back into the Knights Templar and this organization that was suppressed back in 1307. What was the Knights Templar? Why is it important?
Well, officially, they were launched around 1099 A.D. by the Pope, and they were a small group, in theory, that were of literal knights of the temple, as their name implies, that were supposed to serve as bodyguards for pilgrims going to the Holy Land and also participated in the Crusades, and then they were, as you say, suppressed around 1307 by King Philip IV of France under an accusation that they'd been practicing Satanism and witchcraft. Some people say that it was that the charges were accurate. Others claim it was just a bid by royalty to confiscate the treasure that the Knights Templar had managed to collect traveling around Europe and the Middle East.
All right. Well, I notice you have the televangelists here under the conspiracies. Do you think some of them are involved in the conspiracy?
Well, I included them primarily because a number of them have been accused or convicted of various swindles and cover-ups as far as bilking their audiences. And we have individuals like Pat Robertson, who has been very much in the news lately with advocating murder of foreign heads of state. And at one point he thought or claimed that he thought nuclear weapons should be dropped on the U.S. State Department and so forth.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now you've got something in here about the Thuggies. I doubt that there are probably 1 in 1,000 Americans who ever heard of the Thuggies.
Ah, well, the worshippers of Kali, going back possibly as far as the 12th century A.D. and supposedly suppressed by British authorities in the 1840s, this religious group that practiced a form of human sacrifice by traveling around strangling travelers that they met in India, and estimates are that they may have killed millions of people over a period of 2 or 3 centuries.
And, of course, isn't that where the word assassin comes from, because they were they used hashish?
Correct. Going back, in that case, even to a previous cult in ancient Persia.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you talk a little about the conspiracy behind Flight TW-800. Do you think this is a legitimate conspiracy? Do you think we've got the truth on that? Or do you think that somebody's suppressing the truth about what happened at TWA Flight 800?
Well, the evidence on that one, I think, is very murky. Of course, now we've started to see novels about it. And Nelson DeMille has a new novel out called Nightfall about people who supposedly saw the missile hit the plane as it was flying over, and now they're being pursued by various groups, and they don't know who it is. But the FBI certainly, I think, had a confusing effect on the investigation rather than clarifying anything, and there seemed to be some contradictory statements about explosives residue and so forth found in the wreckage, and I would say I don't think we heard the truth. I don't know if we've heard the last of it or not.
Well, I don't know that we'll ever know the truth about a lot of these things, but I think that we can agree. We've been lied to about the downing of TW-800, because I talked to several people who saw the missiles go up who were very, very reliable people. Now, what about the Turner Diaries? This is a very interesting aspect of this. This is well, I'm going to let you tell our listeners what the Turner Diaries were and why this whole concept is so very important. What do they have to do with what's going on?
Well, back in 1978, this book came out, The Turner Diaries, a novel describing a futuristic America which was controlled by Zog, defined by neo-Nazi groups as the Zionist occupation government. It describes a group called the Order of so-called loyal white men who rise up and overthrow the Jewish government and blow up FBI headquarters and so forth. It was written under a pseudonym by a man whose real name was Dr. William Pierce, headed one of the larger neo-Nazi groups in America, the National Alliance. He's dead now. But one of the great fans of the book, of course, was Timothy McVeigh, who used to sell copies at gun shows, the Oklahoma City bomber. The book was also considered the blueprint for a real-life group called The Order that went around robbing banks and armored cars in the 1980s to finance what they called a holy racial war.
All right, and of course, this is really very true. This thing, these things actually did happen, and Timothy McVeigh was selling the book. Now, whether he was selling it to create the impression that he was a right-wing extremist, and some part of a militia group, or whether he really believed in these things, we may never know. What about the triads? You have the triads there, and that's something. That's actually an Oriental organization, isn't it?
Absolutely. Some people refer to it as the Chinese Mafia. It's also known in some quarters as the Tong Organization. It's a group of criminal organizations originally based in China. They go by different names in Chinese, but they're sort of the equivalent of, they are organized crime. They smuggle drugs into the United States and into Europe. They move a lot of, they traffic in human beings, prostitutes and illegal aliens and fugitives. They sell a lot of weapons. Some people consider them more successful on a criminal level than the Mafia or any other world organized crime unit.
But aren't they actually right here? In other words, don't they have branches in the United States? Or
no question about it. They're big in Canada and also in the United States. They have in every Chinatown around the country they're represented, and they supposedly have quite large investments in gambling in Las Vegas, Atlantic City, and elsewhere, and they fairly well dominate the trade in Asian heroin.
Well, now, what about the Mafia? Where do they fit into this whole thing? Do they work with the triad, or are they competing with the triad?
Well, I think it's some of both. They've been, to some degree, I think, muscled out of the heroin trade in certain areas where the Chinese syndicates are stronger than the Italian mob may be. But for years, of course, Mafia families, so-called, were smuggling Chinese heroin into the country, which they purchased from triad brokers in Thailand or Hong Kong.
Well, of course, then has the mafia sort of lost some of its notoriety or some of its power and being usurped by perhaps M13 and the triads?
Well, so we hear the FBI claims that they've locked up most of the powerful mafia leaders. Of course, the traditional Italian organized crime family still exists in every major city, but generally, at least we're led to believe that they're smaller in numbers and lessened in influence compared to other ethnic syndicates, the Japanese Yakuza as well, some of the Colombian drug cartels and so forth.
And now, do the M13 fit into I don't even know whether you covered that, but I'm sure you probably at least have some experience looking into the background of M13?
Well, not really.
Not
much.
Well, this is a very important new organization. Well, you've got a lot of things here. Of course, the Symbionese Liberation Army, that was around a long time ago. Is that around still?
As far as I know, that's believed to be defunct. It had very few members at the time it was active in the mid-70s, of course, notorious for kidnapping Patty Hearst. A couple of the survivors, Emily Harris and her husband, I believe, have been paroled now, but all the rest of the members were basically killed during a couple of shootouts with LAPD and the FBI.
Well, now, what about Suriname? Where does Suriname fit into this?
Well, as I was going around the world, I basically included little entries on each country that's had any kind of revolution or civil war or any sort of terrorist activity at all. So I tried to hit a little bit of each of them, and here I just basically covered some of the revolutionary groups like the Jungle Commando organization and so far that was active in the 1990s.
Well, what about the Rockefellers? You certainly have a page there on the Rockefellers. I would have given them about half the book, but anyway, where do the Rockefellers fit into what we're talking about? You're talking about conspiracy and conspiracy theories. Do they play some part in this?
Well, basically a little bit of everything going back more than a century. Standard Oil itself, which of course they founded in Iran, was involved in criminal conspiratorial activities that led to its being broken up under antitrust legislation. Then, of course, into politics, Winthrop Rockefeller in Arkansas and Nelson Rockefeller in New York.
Don't forget Jay Rockefeller and John D., I think is...
Oh, yeah, well, the big money man that founded the dynasty, of course, and then also involved in... some shady evangelism down in South America that was actually sort of a wedge or a spearhead for petroleum exploration down there and annihilation of some of the native tribes. A little bit of everything. When you have that much money, I believe one of the quote that opened The Godfather, the novel was, "Behind every great fortune lies a crime."
And, of course, basically we have a couple of Rockefellers, one in the Congress, one in the Senate, one in the Congress today. Jay Rockefeller, I think, is the senator, and I think there's a John in Congress. So they always have their fingers into all sorts of things. Winthrop was the governor of Arkansas, and, of course, Nelson was the governor of the state of California, sort of like the Bushes, a governor of Florida, president of the United States.
Kennedys as well. The dynastic families have a tendency to spread out and crop up everywhere, it seems.
Amen to that. Well, the SS. Now, we've heard that, you know, the SS was more than just not a militarist organization. Wasn't there a spiritual component to the SS?
Oh, absolutely. Depending on who you talk to, they were involved in various kinds of occultism, either Nordic paganism, black magic. We know Heinrich Himmler rebuilt the Wolfsburg Castle in Germany with slave labor, and in the basement there built some kind of ritual chamber. Nobody really knows, no surviving people really know what went on there, but it was laid out as if it was used for some kind of sacrifice, ritual, or whatever it may be. They went around the world looking for the hollow earth, chasing the Ark of the Covenant. Basically, any kind of occult theory you could think of, the Spear of Christ.
The Spear of Longimus, and of course they were looking for the Holy Grail, and they even sent expeditions into Tibet and Nepal, looking for that secret of the origin of the Aryan race. We'll be back with Michael Newton here in a minute. Fascinating book, fascinating subject, and we're just going to touch the high points of this in an hour. Sometime we'll have to spend a couple of hours together if we can talk Mr. Newton into it. This is the sort of information you need to understand, that there are all sorts of intricacies, all sorts of branches of these these organizations. They're not imaginary. They're real. And each one of them ties together. You've got to be able to see all the dots and then begin to connect them. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Newton, and we're talking about his book, Conspiracies and Conspiracy Theories. Fascinating book. And he's got all sorts of things. What about snuff films? You have a section in there on snuff films. Does this really happen, that they will murder people on a motion picture and people will pay to see it?
Well, that depends, of course, on who you ask. Some police departments claim they have snuff films stashed away in their vault. Other organizations, like the FBI, claim they don't exist. Certain private journalists claim that they have seen copies and tracked down some of the producers scattered around the world from Buenos Aires to Croatia during the ethnic cleansing over there. So nobody seems to really know. But it would seem, you know, based on things we found in the possession of serial killers and so forth, I'd be very surprised if somebody hadn't filmed murder somewhere.
All right, now, what about the story of Karen Silkwood? Because she certainly, this was a very, very strange story.
Right, well, the discussion ongoing today, or the debate as to whether she was murdered or not for exposing, you know, hanky-panky or discrepancies, improprieties, whatever we should say, in a nuclear power plant in Oklahoma. And, of course, turned into the movie with Meryl Streep. Several times it appeared that Silkwood was exposed to radiation under circumstances that really shouldn't have happened, not only at the job but at her apartment, and then eventually when she's on her way to deliver some incriminating documents to a journalist, her car goes off the road, either a single car crash or somebody forced her off. To this day, nobody will admit really knowing what happened.
But I was interested that there was really a $10 million settlement with her family, you know, to supposedly keep them quiet. What was that all about?
Well, there was a wrongful death suit filed by her family against the Kerr-McGee Corporation, company that she worked for, and they won a jury award on that for $10.5 million, but then it was overturned on appeal, and like 7 or 8 years later, the family accepted a settlement of like $1.4 million. Which, you know, the company's going to say it would have cost more than that to keep fighting the case, but who really knows?
Well, what about skull and bones? What is skull and bones, and what is it doing?
Well, in theory, it's nothing but a nice, innocent fraternity at Yale University, but if you start to track some of the people that have been members of it, including several generations of Bushes, also rival candidate John Kerry, William F. Buckley, various others, there are at least theories that the members of this fraternity, who are all very wealthy, you know, trust fund baby type individuals, help each other throughout life, get established in business and stay out of trouble and so forth, theoretically always within the law. But again, that's the question that arises.
All right, fine. So we will not try to hold you to that. I will comment for our listeners, though, that we have a wonderful four tapes out on Skull and Bones, including an interview with the daughter of a family, as both her father and grandfather were Skull and Bones, and then, of course, with Alexander Robbins, who wrote a book about this, The Secrets of the Tomb. Fascinating insight into the skull and bones you won't hear elsewhere, and which, of course, then brings us to the Bohemian Grove. What is the Bohemian Group?
Well, the Bohemian Group is, again, one of these elite societies that meets in a place in California called Bohemian Grove, and they meet yearly, more or less. Their activity is very secretive.
Hold that thought right there, please.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Michael Newton, and we've been talking about some of the things that have gone on behind the scenes. He was saying that the story of Karen Silkwood, who, of course, died under very mysterious circumstances, and her family eventually brought a suit against her employer, and, of course, eventually the suit was settled for $10 million, but then, well, many years later they got it reversed, but the company eventually paid well over $1 million to try to silence this, because we can't let the American people know that Well, sometimes people get killed because they know too much. And then, of course, we were beginning to talk about the Bohemian Grove, which meets up here in Northern California on a regular basis, and they're really very secretive, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Dating back, I believe, to around 1883, and some of the recent members, again, well, include Nelson Rockefeller, we already mentioned, Henry Kissinger, Richard Nixon, and an older time, Herbert Hoover and Teddy Roosevelt, supposedly frequented the place. And photographs have been smuggled out, supposedly, or are available on the Internet, of strange activities. One website claims that they depict a lynching of someone. It's really hard to tell. The body's not hanging, or you can't even really tell if it's a corpse, of course. But theories, again, that this is a group or a meeting place for some of the same individuals that are involved in the Trilateral Commission and groups of that nature.
And Skull and Bones. And,
right.
So all of these covert secret organizations sort of merge into one another.
A great deal of overlap, sure. You could almost call it incestuous, I suppose.
And these are really the people who determine our future, and they all have secrets. And the question is, what are those secrets? Well, they're so secret that nobody dares talk about them. And if they do, why, who knows, they might end up like Karen Silkwood under any circumstances. It's a fascinating book here. Conspiracies and conspiracy theories, and of course did you travel a great deal around the world to get the information and documentation for this?
Well, that's the good thing about the Internet anymore. I have a fairly substantial library, and I get out a couple of times a year to go here and there, but a great deal of this material is actually available through the Internet or from sources that you can pick up there that are selling some of the different books and tapes like you mentioned earlier, and photos and what have you. And a lot's come out over the last 10 or 15 years under the Freedom of Information Act, of course.
And, of course, it really is wonderful, the information that's there. Of course, there's a lot of disinformation on the Internet, but there's a lot of true information. And I'd like to know is who's putting up all the money to put up the phony websites and to target the conservatives with a lot of bad information. If you use it, well, your reputation's gone forever. Have you encountered any of that?
Well, the websites are, I suppose they're traceable if you are the FBI or the NSA or something like that. I don't have the facilities to track down. I know I've had trouble with some of the text of my books showing up verbatim, you know, plagiarized on a variety of websites. My publisher's been 18 months after one trying to get it taken off the Internet. But, you know, who knows where some of these things come from. They're subtle enough in some cases to pass for truth. Other cases, they're so outrageous that people seem drawn to believe them because they're so extreme.
Well, what about Scientology? Scientology.
Oh, boy.
because this is a real can of worms, and we've got people like Tom Cruise, and some of our very famous movie stars are into Scientology. Apparently, they're pretty powerful, aren't they?
Well, they're very wealthy, and they're very litigious. I'm always amazed that when somebody like Tom Cruise is on TV challenging Matt Lauer and spouting about how much he knows about psychiatry, that no one ever brings out or mentions the root theology of the church itself, which basically goes back to an ancient alien named Xenu, who supposedly took a bunch of hostile aliens and stuck them on Earth millions of years ago and blew them up in volcanoes, and now their spirits are infesting everybody, and you'll have a horrible life unless Scientology clears them out of your system.
Isn't that something that came from L. Ron Hubbard?
Absolutely, a science fiction writer who found a way to make himself a tax-exempt church and wealth.
And of course, it's like so many of the things that come on today, they have no basis. In fact, Kwanzaa, you know, somebody just made up a holiday, and there are hundreds of thousands of people who celebrate a holiday that was just made up here recently.
Interestingly enough, the founder of that originally, or many back in the early 70s, ran a group called US. At that time, his name was Ron Coringa in Los Angeles. It was a group run by the Los Angeles Police Department and the FBI to destroy the Black Panthers.
And so we can look to our own tax money for creating Kwanzaa.
Most likely.
Okay. We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with our special guest, and his name, of course, is Michael Newton. His book is Conspiracies and Conspiracy Theories, and when we get back, why we're going to tell you how to get the book, and, of course, if you want to give us a call, our telephone number is 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, of course, is Michael Newton and his book Conspiracy and Conspiracy Theories. And we're just going some of these things. What is Scientology? What's its attraction to people? Why do people want to get into it? And I know that they have been very, very litigious. Of course, they've spoken out against some of the things in, you know, in psychiatry, which I happen to agree with. So, is this really all about? Why are people drawn into this, a new religion created by, you know, a science fiction writer?
Well, I think it's trendy. Of course, if you're a multimillionaire celebrity, they have the Scientology Celebrity Center there in L.A., which is basically a five-star resort, and you're wined and dined and so forth, and treated very well. And I think there's a certain appeal to... It almost has sort of an intellectual facade. I want to say pseudo-intellectual, because the underpinnings of it, the alleged theology, are so outlandish that you really have to laugh almost when you get into Xenu and the aliens and the engrams and holding the little electrodes and getting your soul cleared and whatnot. But it certainly appears to be a trendy thing this recently, at least among Hollywood celebrities.
All right, fine. So I think that that's something that we should know about. I think you have to know where it came from. You've got a section here on Satanism. Do people really worship Satan?
Well, there's no question that there are several recognized satanic groups and churches in the United States going back to the 60s, the Church of Satan, the Temple of Set, and several others which are recognized by the IRS as tax-exempt churches. Then, of course, going back to the Middle Ages or beyond, there have been stories, some of them documented by trials and convictions, of groups outside the law that practice homicide and so forth in a ritual fashion. And then beyond that, there's the whole nebulous realm of rumors about drug dealing syndicates and child abductions and daycare molestations and what have you.
So this is simply not the rantings of some right-wing extremists. There really are people out there that you think that really do look to Satan as the source of their strength and their spiritual strength?
Well, we know, as I say, the Church of Satan was founded by Anton LaVey in 1966, and privately he admitted to friends that it was a tax dodge, but they have the published Satanic Bible, and one of the spinoff groups founded by a former Army Lieutenant Colonel, the Temple of Set, claims to be the real Satanic organization, stripped of the mercantilism and the sham, and little satellite groups all over the country and indeed around the world that advertise publicly. At one time you could find the Church of Satan and the Temple of Set both listed in the San Francisco Yellow Pages. So they definitely exist.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we go on, we're getting a couple of callers here, but I wanted you to tell our listeners how they can get your book. Do you have a website or just a book?
Well, I don't sell it myself. It's from Facts on File, the publisher in New York. They have a website. The paperback version should be available in most any bookstore. It could be ordered there for, I think it runs about $14.95. If they want to go tack on an extra $80 and get the hardcover library version, they could order it from the publisher.
All right, fine. And so it's just Facts on File as the...
Correct. And I think factsonfile.com would take them to the website.
Factsonfile.com. Well, let's go to Putney, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Putney.
Yes, Doctor. Good evening.
Good evening. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I did. You didn't quite get around to asking him his view on the CFR. I was wondering what he had to say about that.
All right, fine. What do you think about the CFR? Some people think that this is a sinister group just because every Secretary of State and just about every head of the Federal Reserve and just about every chairman of the or director of the CIA comes from there, and the people who have the great wealth and control the media and the corporations, the great foundations, come from there. What is the CFR? Should it be something we should be concerned about?
Well, Council on Foreign Relations, of course, we're referring to a group extremely influential. As you say, virtually every president, you know, for generations has belonged to it, all the top diplomats and so forth. Again, we have the Rockefellers and various other wealthy families tied in, backers of General Motors and Xerox and all the huge corporations, many former CIA leaders, including George H.W. Bush. So they definitely chart the course of American foreign policy. Whether that's sinister or not depends on your political viewpoint and how you feel about the individuals and the policies they chart, I suppose.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to ask, Putney?
I was curious because I have heard references from yourself, Doctor, and other talk shows to the extent that the country's best interest is not really served by the CFR.
All right, let's get Mr. Newton's view on that. Do you think that they are intent upon preserving the America that I grew up in? In other words, where we had individual freedom and sovereignty of our nation, or do you think they're dedicated to bringing about a one-world government and altering the status of life here in America?
Well, I suspect that considering who the individuals are and their extreme wealth and their sort of, I guess, quote-unquote bipartisan approach to politics, they would, in my view, be more interested in feathering their own nest, or I suppose I would say, than I don't think they have any great concern for the individual working man in America, or much less the peasants in any country where they're expanding so-called free trade.
And, of course, Putney, in my estimation, they are simply a front for the power elite, along with the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the Club of Rome. They're people who have a different dream. They want a one-world government, and they're intent upon the destruction of America as we know it. Anything else, Putney?
Yes, that brings me to my second observation. You know, not necessarily a question, but recently, let's say within the last maybe year, I can't help but notice how frequently National Public Radio will interview a member of the council for their view of a particular situation, and I guess that disturbs me somewhat.
Well, of course, do you have any thoughts at all on that, Michael?
Well, I suppose they're considered to be the people in the know, the knowledgeable folks, the movers and shakers. So if you want an opinion on the war in Iraq or whatever it may be, I guess you go to one of the people that planned it.
I think that's a pretty good answer. You notice, Putney, that they don't ask me to come on National Public Radio. In fact, the last time I did a national television program, very shortly after that, they closed down the program. So, anything else, Putney, before we let you go?
No, thank you very much.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Let's go, of course, to, I guess we've got Alan calling from Michigan. Hi, Alan. How are you doing? What part of Michigan are you calling from?
What
part of Michigan?
Royal Oak. It's a suburb of Detroit.
All right, fine. Can we? Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I was just wondering, could you elaborate on the National Alliance and its founder, Dr. Pierce?
Well, William Pierce was originally a professor of physics. He came by the title Doctor Honestly, but he quit his job as a college professor to go to work as an aide for George Lincoln Rockwell in the American Nazi Party back in the early 1960s. After Rockwell was killed, Pierce spun off on a tangent and took control of a group that was originally sort of a fringe group of the George Wallace presidential campaign, and that turned into the National Alliance, which was ranked by some groups, or was until Pierce's death, as the largest and some would say most dangerous neo-Nazi group active in America.
I didn't get the part about George Wallace. What was that? Did he work for the Wallace Group?
Well, yeah, back in 1968, during the first Wallace presidential campaign, the group that eventually became the National Alliance was a youth movement for Wallace back on the East Coast, and Pierce affiliated himself with that as sort of an advisor, and then when the Wallace campaign fell through, Pierce sort of took control of the group and eventually changed its name to the National Alliance, and by then it was completely divorced from Wallace.
Hmm. And, of course, I think you have to understand, Alan, that I believe that many of these organizations are actually infiltrated and are created. They are a controlled opposition. In other words, if you control both sides of the question, then there's no place for people to go to have an independent position.
I was just wondering, the question about the CFR, I was just wondering, I thought I heard at one time that Barbara Walters was a part of that.
She is a member, right.
Barbara Walla is a part of the CFR.
She was a member, right.
Is she still a member?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at the most recent one, but last time I looked, she was a member.
Well, I was just wondering,
all of the people, whether it be Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw, If you want to get ahead in the media, you join the Council on Foreign Relations.
But how many people can join it, though?
Well, they have about 4,000 now. Anything you'd like to say on that, Michael? I don't mean to steal your thunder.
No, that's fine. I think certainly it's if you're going to be a big league journalist, you want to be affiliated with again the people in power, because that grants you the interviews, and you can do your little TV specials.
But how many people can actually join that? Isn't it kind of restricted? Not everybody can join it, can they?
Well, no, you and I've never been asked to join. But
well,
I would tell you that it is where the elite go, and this is how you get ahead. If you want to get ahead in this country, you join the Council on Foreign Relations. You might even become the president. Anyway, we're out of time. If you want to get more information on it, I have four tape sets on the secret government, on secret societies, and even a secret government special. And you can read, if you want to know the real origin of the CFR, you need to read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time.
You know what hasn't come up? The Masons.
We've actually covered that.
Oh.
Okay, but thanks so much for calling, Alan.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, friend. Well, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I do, Stan. Thanks. There's a certain category of these nefarious organizations that promote themselves or present themselves as Christian. And I want to know what you know about such groups, and especially ones that use symbols like the cross and the crown. You know, it's a very commonly seen symbol of a crown with a cross poking out through the top of it. Just things like that. What do you know of groups like that that present themselves as Christian?
The symbol itself is not ringing a bell. I know in the book I covered several groups such as the so-called Christian Reconstructionists who advocate replacing the U.S. Constitution with Old Testament rules and regulations and introducing stoning as our form of capital punishment. But
Rosicrucians are one group that I know you...
Oh, well, sure, yeah, they're in the book, yeah.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about the Rosicrucians? Because that's been around for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is another one that in some theories is linked to the Templars, Rosicrucian standing, of course, for the Rosy Cross, and a putative Christian organization. Some people carry it back to the Knights Templar. As far as we know, it was, some say founded around 1188. Others say it sprang up in the mid-17th century, tied in with some of the crowned heads of Europe. It takes its name from a German occultist named Christian Rosenkreuz, or Kreutz, I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it's sort of a cross between Christianity and mysticism. Many groups, you'll still see them advertising in the back of tabloid newspapers today, in some cases, for modern Rosicrucian societies.
In fact, we even have a temple over in San Jose. We live in Santa Cruz, and there's a temple over there. And, of course, it's all sort of a Egyptian and, sort of Babylonian and lions. But, of course, it really, of course, is one of the cult religions. So anything else you want to ask, Mike?
That's all. Thanks.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, of course, it's just fascinating information. All of these secret organizations, and it must have been sort of a challenge as you put this all together.
Well, there was a lot that wound up being left out because I start with a limitation of about 250,000 words for the finished book, so probably it could have been two or three times this length, but it basically came down to trying to hit the high points without disappointing anybody too badly.
You've got a whole section in here on Bill Clinton.
I mean, oh, absolutely.
Why would you put Bill Clinton into a book on conspiracy and conspiracy theories?
Well, basically, I approached that from two angles. Of course, Hillary, his wife's famous claim that she and he were targets of the great, vast right-wing conspiracy, but then also I listed some of the things that the Clintons were involved in as far as shady deals like Whitewater and Castle Grande and some of those, the death of Vince Foster, some of the allegations made against them by Jerry Falwell and whatnot of drug dealing and suspicious deaths, the Clinton death list and so forth. And then we find Clinton involved in a number of groups that we've already discussed, like the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, of course.
All right, fine. Well, you've got a section in here on something I've always rather fascinated with, and that is Christian identity. In fact, it was back, sometime in 1998, 1999, when the Attorney General of the United States, that great paragon of virtue, Janet Reno, had actually come forward and said the real things we had to worry about were these domestic terrorist groups like Christian Identity. What did you learn about Christian Identity?
Well, it actually dates from the 19th century. Originally, it was called Anglo-Israelism, and it's a twist on Old Testament theology that, as we see it today, it's extremely anti-Semitic. It postulates that Nordic tribes are the true lost tribes of Israel rather than the Jews. And therefore, real Christians stress their identity, hence the name of the church, going back to the Nordic, or what Hitler would have called the Aryan races, during the 70s and 80s, 1970s and 80s, a very popular religion with the Ku Klux Klan and, again, groups like the National Alliance and so forth. Still many identity congregations around today, although some of the more extreme racist groups have switched over to Odinism now and some of the old Nordic pagan gods.
All right, fine. And, Chris, we do know that the one Elohim City, which was a Christian Identity group, almost everybody there was working for one or another branch of government. Our tax dollars at work, and Reverend Millar, who headed it, was an FBI informant, and Carol Howe worked for the BATF, and of course, Strassmeyer, I don't know who he worked for. He was probably CIA or something of that sort. So,
Both affected in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right.
Old Andre.
Very, very strong ties into... So our government has infiltrated all of these. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think we've got great intelligence agencies, I mean, you're incredibly naive. They infiltrated the FBI, they infiltrated the CIA, they infiltrated and financed all of these organizations. Let's take our last call here, and that's from Dale in Aptos. Hi, Dale.
Hi there. Yeah, I have a quick question that I came across a theory, apparently, somewhere that when the Soviet Union fell, there was a group known as the Yakuza who had essentially financed the people that were taking power in Russia, and I'd just like to get your comments on that.
The Yakuza? Have you ever heard of that one, Michael?
Yeah, the Yakuza is actually a collection of Japanese groups. It's the equivalent of the triads, going back again into medieval times, if not before, and it's considered by many people to be the Japanese mafia. I know they work, as far as drug deals and so forth, with the so-called Russian mafia, but I didn't come up with anything as far as them financing the fall of communism.
Right.
That's a new one on me. I know there are Yakuza activists here in the States.
Giving them the money to recovery and conduct operations, and so there was essentially a debt of gratitude that was owed by the Russian politicians to the Yakuza.
I think that all of these secret societies, in one way or another, sort of interlock with a kind of a common brotherhood, even though they're separate, they're interlocked. Would you think there might be a truth to that, Michael, or not?
Oh, no question. I mean, the Yakuza, they're global. They own property in Las Vegas. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I just think we might mention that we do carry four-tape sets on so many things. We have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones. We have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. We have a four-tape set on the secret societies going into the background of what the Council on Foreign Relations is. Several four-tape sets on chemtrails. Several four-tape sets on the Kennedy assassination to understand what's really going on. If you have not heard or seen our latest talk, which is entitled Planned Population Reduction, let me suggest that you get this. It will give you real insight into the fact that there really are some evil and wicked people out there who intend to kill off most of the people in the world. If you don't understand water fluoridation, understand that they have been able to control the reality of your doctor and your dentist and key people in our country, and it is all part of this same thing that got Karen Silkwood. It gets into the fluoride industry. Basically, fluoride is used to enrich uranium. It's used in almost every scientific process and every manufacturing process here. And fluoride is the most dangerous and lethal of all of our poisons. That's why they're putting it in the water, because there's no way they could get rid of it otherwise. Besides that, it decreases fertility, it decreases intelligence, it produces cancer, it disrupts the endocrine system, it destroys the bones. That's why they're putting it in your water. There really are evil people out there. You need to get our four tape sets on fluoride. We have two of them. We have a video on fluoride, the history of water fluoridation. We have another one on DVD on drinking water. We have a wonderful book called The Fluoride Deception. You need to find out if we're telling the truth. You need to get my syllabus because it will give you the documentation on this and take you to the websites put up by college professors. Now, if this is true, what is it? Thank you.